show! You have all made it to the dance. You have all made it.
Coming to you from the X-Access, it's John of All Trades with your host, John X.
Welcome to the John of All Trades podcast, episode 371. I'm your host, John X. Thank you for joining us. Glad to have you back once again. And in a word, this episode is about tacos. One of my favorite things. I mean, literally, I think I could eat tacos every single day. And you know what? Sometimes I do. And one of my favorite places to get tacos here in Denver, they also have a Fort Collins location, is Uno Mas Taqueria. Now, funny story, I was out golfing randomly a few weeks ago, and I was just playing by myself, so you kind of get paired up with whoever you get paired up with. And I got paired up with two guys. One of them actually worked for Denver Golf. He was a great guy. His name already escapes me. But the other guy was Brian Forrester, one of my guests this week. Now, he, along with Chris Rohde, are the two guys most responsible for running Uno Mas Taqueria. Brian handles the food side, Chris handles the drink side. Now, Uno Mas has been around for about 11 years, which is a damn fine track record no matter what kind of restaurant you're doing. Because as they'll tell you, running a restaurant in Denver is very, very challenging. There's a lot to it. There's labor challenges, there's supply chain challenges, there's competition challenges, taxes, all sorts of things that make running a restaurant very, very difficult. They talk about the margins in here, and I think the margins will surprise you. Good Lord. We cover a lot of really interesting ground here. Two things really stand out to me. One, they say they want to be the bosses that they never had, which, my God, I love that. As someone who has had a problem with almost all my bosses, having a cool boss, that seems like a dream. Thankfully, I work for myself, and I don't really have to worry about that anymore. But it would have been nice in my career. Second, they say this is the last restaurant job they want people to have. Either stay there or make this the last stop before you start your career in earnest, whatever that is. And in the back half, you can hear them talk about how they still get calls for references for people applying to become cops or doctors or scientists or whatever. They still use them as references, which is a real awesome gold star in their column. And in addition to that, we just talk about cool stuff here. Like how a good restaurant functions like a good band. Everyone plays their roles, but if you're playing in tune, it becomes a great experience for the audience or the customer, depending on if you're talking about a band or a restaurant. Second, they have this tequila loyalty program. It's like a punch card. It sounds really, really fun. You should definitely go check it out. There's links to everything in the companion blog piece. I know it's been a while since I've done a show, so here's a reminder, johnofalltrades.us. That's johnofalltrades.us. And just a note on that. This show is a joy for me. I love having this platform to kind of do what I want. But as I've articulated before, this show has done for me what I wanted it to do, which is to say it helped me become a professional. So in addition to this show, you've heard me say this a bunch of times, I'm working on like a half dozen others. There's people coming to me with proposals on a fairly frequent and regular basis. And so I don't always have the time to dedicate to this show. But when I come across someone cool like Brian here, I'm like, hey, come on my show, let's do this. And he was more than happy to do it because as he knows in restaurants, as I know in podcasting, and in particular with entrepreneurship, it takes a very long time to build a solid reputation. It takes a very short time to destroy one. So with that in mind, let's spotlight a really super cool local business and two really good-hearted dudes who I just vibed with immediately. I sat on their back patio, drinking beer, talking about tacos, talking about small business ownership. It's what I love. What can I say? I think I did this like the day before my birthday, too. And I thought, this is a professional obligation I have? Phenomenal. I did my life right. I'm happy. So, let's get to it. Episode 371 features Brian Forrester and Chris Rohde. Two of the guys leading the ship at Uno Mas Taqueria. Their episode starts right now.
Yeah, I mean, our spring really launches off. Cinco de Mayo obviously is a huge catalyst, so May is our biggest month.
Okay.
But May and June are by far the largest taco hard-hitting times.
Is Cinco de Mayo the Black Friday of taco restaurants?
Yes. Oh, God, yeah.
100%.
Yeah. I mean, people are beating each other up for tacos and margaritas. And we usually throw a big party and have you know, our reps bring as much as they can because we are trying to just give as much away and trying to sell as much.
Sure.
And our locations are pretty small, so we just pack them all day long.
Well, I'm a guy who, if you ask me what I want for dinner, the answer is probably going to be tacos. And that's irrespective of season. How much is the difference between, say, May through the summer to, like, the colder months?
Colder months are way different. A lot of it, I think, isn't necessarily people's craving for tacos. It's the patio season and Colorado accessibility and walkability of people wanting to just make their lives nice and easy and walk to their neighborhood taco joint. In the winter, that kind of cuts. There's, you know, rain, freezing rain. Snow is actually, when it snows, those are good days. Snow days are
really
good. Yeah. People like to go out in the snow. So, like, in October, November when it snows, not great. But in January when everyone's, like, used to the snow and happy when it snows.
That's true.
Those can be really good days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's not just tacos, right? Or is it?
Of course. No, no.
Because, like, when it's cold out, I want to go get a chili relleno.
So we don't have chili rellenos.
No, I understand that. But, like, just the thinking. And I want that or an approximation. I want, like, a nice hearty burrito. You know, I want some heat from my spices. That'll warm you up, right?
Completely.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, we just brought nachos onto the menu, which have been a really strong hit so far. And then we expanded our burrito options pretty well and our quesadilla options to have kind of more of that hearty aspect. Our a la carte tacos are always great.
Yeah.
But now we have this, like, heavy, hard-hitting food that people, you know, crave and want. And we'll see how that works during the winter season.
So the voice you're listening to is Brian Forrester, and we're also joined by Chris Rohde. And Brian and I had the pleasure of playing golf together. We didn't choose that. We were paired up together and worked out really nicely because we hit it off on the golf course, knocked a few around, had a great time. You told me you own this place. I mentioned to you I love the lengua taco especially.
Absolutely.
Right as you mentioned, like, I don't know, can we still do this?
Yeah.
Because the cost is as it is. But I wanted to get together with you because I haven't had a restaurateur on here in a long time. And I think restaurants have been in the news quite a bit lately, just because, especially here in Denver, the cost of doing business is really, really makes for a challenging environment. Would you agree with that? And, like, what contributes to that?
I mean, completely. So it's myself.
Oh, and I didn't even say, we're in Uno Mas Taqueria. We're on your back patio. You guys are the proprietors of that. We're here in the Platte Park neighborhood.
Okay. Yeah, we're on the corner of South Pearl Street and Iowa, 1585 South Pearl. So
one of my favorite taco joints in the city, so just superfluous that I got paired up with you.
Completely.
Yeah, so I knew your business, and I go, man, I would love for you to talk about it. So anyway, I wanted to, just because I didn't even say the name, like a true amateur hour jackass, let's get that out of the way. But yeah, by all means, how is it being in the restaurant business in Denver in 24?
It's tough. You know, it's been tough. We've adapted a ton. Obviously, I'm sure you've heard through many of your conversations about how COVID has hit so many different aspects of the entire world. But for us in Denver, particularly, the restaurant industry has been hit really hard. One, obviously, inflation and food costs. A lot of our food costs have gone up 100%.
100%?
100% on some things.
Over what time period?
Over a four-year period.
Jeez.
But, you know, like, we can't charge double. So
no, people
we
would
have
be pissed,
to take
right?
on those costs. People would be absolutely pissed. Labor in Denver is also a tough one. You know, it's great that our staff is getting paid well, but it's come quickly. And it's come at a cost to not only us, our customers. I read something from the Colorado Restaurant Association that Denver has one of the lowest margins for restaurants. Restaurants are already significantly well known for being low at around 3-5% for a profit margin. And in Denver, the restaurant profit margin is maybe one.
One?
Maybe two. And so that's why you're seeing, you read Westward articles, people are closing all the time. Now, people are still coming in and reopening and making new
businesses.
They're
still trying.
But it's definitely a lot. But at the same time, the beauty of Denver is that it's vibrant. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people here that want to have a good time and have good food and go get good drinks. So, you know, while there are challenges, there's also these wonderful aspects of being in a really good city that has really good people in it that want to be out. We have a farmer's market in front of us That's every Sunday, May through November. And so, you know, that crushes just brings the whole neighborhood and people from all over the city down to our street. And, yeah, I mean, it's not just me. Obviously, my business partner, Chris Rohde, is over here, too. He's our beverage director, too.
Okay.
So where I focus more on the food costs and our labor costs, Chris can also speak to where our alcohol costs have gone, which fortunately we haven't had to hit that hard. That's been a nice thing. We've had to adapt a lot. There's been a lot of changes, but it hasn't been
Chris,
quite
what's that
same.
Like?
In the last, I mean, COVID fortunately did not do that much for raising prices. It made, you know, since we specialize in tequila and mezcal, most of what we're serving comes over the border. And so that got bottlenecked really badly. There were two big things in 2020. One was, you know, the shipping. And the second was a huge glass fire or fire at a glass bottling factory in Mexico that, you know, handles Mexican Coca-Cola, Herradura was there, Jack Daniels, everything from the Brown-Forman catalog. And that set back production and shipping for months and months.
That's like the butterfly effect that you always hear about.
Oh, completely. Yeah.
Butterfly flaps its wings. In Singapore, you get rain in Central Park.
It was a million glass bottles.
A million glass bottles in Mexico. And I didn't know that. Or if I did, I heard it and I go, well, that's got to suck. And then dismissed it because that doesn't affect me personally.
Yeah.
But I go out and, you know, I want tequila. I want Mexican Coke, whatever. I can't get it now. Yeah. But I don't remember all the steps that happened that led to that happening. And so you having to stay on top of that, something that is so esoteric to the average person is really messing you up right in your living room.
Right. And it coincided with this real boom in interest in tequila and mezcal as well. Not only were celebrity brands kind of proliferating during that time, but just, you know, tequila still occupies the smallest corner of the international spirits market, but it's the fastest growing. So, you know, I'm a little bit of a gatekeeper, but what I would call good tequila is finally making its way to Australia.
Wow.
And, you know, Japan has a big taste for it. You know, and it can be really hard to get more micro distilleries out that way. Also, in Denver, I think the taste for it has been really strong. And while we have a big, you know, almost an oversaturation of taco and tequila restaurants. One thing about us is we just hit our 11-year mark.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah. On last Monday. And, you know, surviving a lot, you know, not just from what happened 4 years ago, but our founder, Patrick White, passed away a couple years ago. You know, the neighborhood has changed in, you know, a lot of people have moved away to run away from the mortgage costs and the rent costs that have been replaced. And, you know, we're fortunate to have a good family presence in this neighborhood as well.
That is
so, you know, I've seen people from the bar itself meet, date, get married, and now
and then we cater their kid's first birthday.
Yeah.
Like, we've done that a lot. That's a very common thing.
That's cool. You become sort of this neighborhood institution at that point.
Yeah, exactly. So one thing that I think has set us, you know, and there's some other tequila and mezcal places in our neighborhood, and they're great spots. You know, I know them, I go to them, I respect them, but, you know, we try to really imbue our staff with a sense of knowledge and ownership over our bar, being able to talk about tequila, being able to present it, attach it to an emotion, you know, give people an experience more. We're not just selling a product, you know, we're selling a memory.
Okay, so to that point, I have two questions. One, you said tequila occupies the lowest space or the smallest corner.
Yeah.
What is the biggest? Is that vodka?
Vodka.
Yeah.
100%.
By far, right?
Vodka.
Yeah.
And then bourbon after that.
Sure. That makes good sense to me.
The popularity has brought a lot more brands over, you know, over the border as well. So there's more to choose from. And we can find, you know, with that, competition and production has created really interesting scenarios of fair labor practices for the humidors, the farmers that work out in the field, repurposing, you know, glass and wood and making more sustainable product, as well as, you know, just the concern for quality of product and sustainability of the companies, you know, because there is such a, I mean, there are over 1,000 tequilas and we get, you know, 200, 300 here.
What are you drinking right now? What's your go-to?
So still love the Fortaleza. That's a huge one for me. I mean, it's lightly oaked. It's beautiful. It's clean.
Ocho Reposado for me.
Okay.
Yeah, or añejo. But yeah. Tequila Ocho is
I think, and then Mezcal, I think Tres Tribus is a newer company from the Magenta family that is doing really cool things with, you know, just fine agaves.
Yeah.
You know.
You mentioned tequila's growing.
Yeah.
I did a recent episode with Jason Zumbrunnen from Ratio Beer Works, mm-hmm. and that was a terrific episode. And we're a bunch of old punks, too, which is great. Craft beer is having an interesting moment because it seems and feels to be going in the other direction. Mm-hmm. So you have tequila on the ascent. You have beer sort of contracting a little bit and craft beer brands having to reckon with who they are, how they fit in, how they maintain market share. You direct beverage here at Uno Mas. What are you seeing from your side when it comes to beer?
We don't do a whole lot. I mean, at this location, we have three taps. One of them is dedicated to Pacifico all the time.
That's much easier then.
Yeah.
It's the old standby, too.
And the other two are, you know, rotating crafts. We keep a hoppy and then a non-hoppy. Fort Collins, we have a location we should mention up in Fort Collins.
Absolutely.
As well.
I call that the motherland. That's where I met my wife. I did bachelor's and master's there. I love that town.
Just on Olive by the Aggie, and they are... You know, they're in a beer mecca of Colorado, and
yeah.
So they have no shortage of, you know, what's available. But, you know, I did actually hear a little piece of that interview with Jason.
Oh, great.
You know, I really wasn't aware of this kind of diminishing profile of craft beer. I mean, you know, because my head is in glass bottles.
Sure.
But you know, I could only see that as also being, you know, is that an oversaturation of market? Is it a health concern for people?
Right. Is it a market correction?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, that makes sense. And the trends just change. They necessarily change.
I mean,
hard seltzers were really having their moment for a long time. And I don't know if that's still as true as it once was. There's a ton of offerings out there, like cocktails in a can, all sorts of different things. With that ever-growing shift and change... Given that you're a taco place primarily, is tequila kind of always the focus, or do those other trends intersect with how you manage this place?
Yeah, tequila is generally the focus.
Okay. Yeah, but we made a shift very consciously a few years ago to start bringing in more mezcals and start going towards the old world sotols.
Yeah.
You know, really just trying to bring in, still within the realm of agave spirits, but shifting away from just solely tequila and, you know, bringing in just some other things, because we noticed that people are starting to get much more educated about the spirit and therefore they are looking for more. And, you know, I think Chris has done a really great job of kind of keeping up with the times on what people are looking for and wanting to try something new, too. So we actually, Chris came up with this great idea. We started a tequila club here.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And so, Chris, if you want to touch on that a little bit more, it's like a tequila loyalty club for people to keep track of what they've ordered. So.
Yeah. It's a basic punch card. You know, it's your coffee shop punch card.
Okay.
We've got spaces on the card for two Blanco. These can be neat pours, ideally, or cocktails. Two Reposado, two Añejo, one extra Añejo. One agave, you know, that could be mezcal, resia, Bacanora, sotol, one flight, and then you get a wild card.
Okay.
You know.
Cool.
A wild card drink. And once you collect all your stamps, we'll give you a $25 gift card and put that in the pot for a larger drawing, a bigger prize.
Right.
On the back of it are those lines where people can track their progress, because the beauty of being a regular is that you know your way around a restaurant and a bar menu, but you might not necessarily know your way around a bar menu. You know, you've got your favorite things and you stick to it. So there are a lot of people that are mezcal curious, and so and tequila curious. That, you know, now we're past, I drank... you know, this in college, and I had a wicked hangover, and I'll never drink tequila again.
It's probably mixed, though, right? I mean, it was Cuervo.
Yeah, it was always Cuervo.
It was. And, you know, but they know better. They're more people are more educated, yeah. and there's more opportunity for them to taste things. So what I wanted them to was for them to explore the menu a little bit more and create an incentive for it. We have a bar book at each of our locations that, you know, has notes on all of our distilleries, the stories behind them, the tasting profiles. You're welcome to look at the book while you're at the bar. You can talk to the bartenders, you know, talk to each other. We were cultivating a little group of, you know, people that are all sitting at the bar tasting new things and discussing it collectively, you know.
That's like hipster energy, like, for the ultimate good. You know yeah, what I mean? Because, completely. Like, there are times where hipster energy is really off-putting.
Uh-huh.
And, like, people who are super fans of something can be a real gatekeeper.
Yeah.
Like, if you've ever spent time with any craft beer snob, you want to swallow a knife by the end of that conversation, right? Where you go, oh my God, just shut up about, like, not the terpenes, that's weed, but, like, the, you know, the hop profile and the yeast and the esters, and you're going, God, just shut up, okay? Yeah. I'm just trying to drink a beer. But that, if you're curious about this kind of thing, is really cool. And spiritually, it kind of reminds me of Old Chicago doing the World Beer Tour.
You're the second person to say that this week.
This week?
Yeah.
Do you get that a lot?
No.
So it's the universe telling you that it's like that this week.
Uh-huh.
Which was a good idea, right?
Yeah, so, and I completed it. As someone who went through it,
uh-huh.
I loved it, and it's fun. And I tried so many. I tried this beer. It was called Zingu Black Beer out of Brazil.
Uh-huh.
And it comes out. It looks like the Ace of Spades, right? But it drinks like a lager, and you don't know. And you, like, so it's almost like a magic trick when you drink it.
Uh-huh.
You go, I did not expect that to be that light looking like that. And so, similar experience, I imagine, when you're drinking mezcal, and you go, how can this taste like this?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we have a range of mezcal profiles, you know, different agaves, different distilling techniques. And, you know, we can very much, you know, walk the fence. I mean, all tequila is mezcal, you know. And
right.
we've got a mezcal that uses the Blue Weber agave and has, you know, I wouldn't even call it smoky. It has, you know, a light roast to it. But someone who's mezcal curious can easily sink into that and find what they like about tequila and start attaching to the mezcal. And, you know, the program creates a space where people can talk about it comfortably. And it's, you know, again, with the bartender, it's conversational.
Of course.
I've always wanted and strove to remove the pretension of dining, you know, elevate experience, elevate ingredients, have that conversation about what's nurturing, you know, what's good, what we love, what's, you know, what we're trying to attain without it being, you know, something uncomfortable or awkward for a guest.
And what I love about it is the club aspect where people, you know, we create a community in a restaurant, obviously.
Yeah.
And when you get somebody that's having a good time with this tequila club card, they talk about it, and they talk about it with our bartenders, and then other people at the bar, they hear about it, and they're like, oh, wait, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
Oh, I can try this. Oh, there's an incentive behind it. There's this education aspect of it, and it kind of spreads, which is the idea behind it, is we want people to, you know, not only just have that experience with the tequila, but have that experience with the other people that are around them and, you know, share and be like, oh, I tried this one. Oh, I had these two. Oh, okay. Well, next time I'm going to go for that. And, you know, it's our prices are pretty approachable so that if you come in and your idea is to have two or have three, you know, obviously depending, it's easy to do. And you can do that with anybody. It's not just the people you came and sat down with. You start talking, especially when this bar gets going. It's a small restaurant, so people overhear you. And it just rattles along and becomes this perfect, perfect domino effect of people just having a good time.
What a beautiful analog kind of thing, too, when you get right down to it.
Yep.
Because people talk about how, you know, you're connected all the time, but you feel lonely a lot.
Mm.
That type of thing invites spontaneous connection. That inspires community. And so it leads me to another question. That is a great example of keeping yourselves vital and making yourselves a unique sort of commodity in the culture of 2024. I'm curious, now that you're 11 years in, I imagine there are people who come in, they order the same thing on a regular basis, right? They want to get what they get, what they like. But you can't keep everything static like that forever. How do you both pay heed to the people who have been here forever and new people coming in, or people who are maybe lapsed and haven't come in a long time? How do you keep the restaurant vital like that?
The beauty is that we've been able to maintain relatively our same simple taco menu for these 11 years. Some modifications here and there. We just did some changes where we left some more traditional OG stuff and changed our menu a little bit. But what we have found that's really brought people in is we do specials. We do specialty tacos or a specialty entree, and then Chris and his staff comes up with a lot of specialty cocktails. So people come and they already know they want the pork belly taco, which is on our menu. Sure. But they also are always coming to be like, are they going to have the goat? Are they going to have the langostino? Are they going to have the salmon taco today?
I've had the langostino. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Are they going to have the tuna tartar tostada? Yeah. And so we've got this rotation of specials and then new stuff that comes on, too, that I think has really helped keep people on their toes. And we purposely don't tell people when they're coming because they're like, when is the goat coming? Like,
I don't know.
Maybe tomorrow? Maybe next week? You'll have to keep coming back to find out. And that's worked out incredibly well. And then Chris, with his cocktail program, we've had, you know, some changes with our regular list. But then there's always a different program, whether they team up with a different tequila that helps sponsor for maybe another benefit, or just however our staff wants to go with a certain tequila just to roll with. Or we just do, you know, roll of the dice, anything different. But we do kind of staff incentives to go around it and make it fun for the staff and then for the customers too. So,
not to mention both locations have incredibly talented bartenders and drink creators, and you know, we really
and chefs
as far as, but on the bar side, you know, we give a lot of freedom and room to the bartenders to just create, you know, what do you need, what is your vision, and how can I help facilitate that. Maybe I'm here at 7 in the morning making a giant batch of watermelon agua fresca before anyone gets here, and I've got the room. Then if that's what they need, that's what we do. And the same with the chefs. You know, if they've got a vision, we facilitate it. We've really managed to not get into a lot of gimmickry, you know, and just focus on what we do and what we do really well.
That's fantastic.
And it's you know, it's worked for us, and people give us feedback, and we listen and we adapt. Boosting our to-go profile, our takeout profile was big too during 2020. You know, we shut down for a day. We came back the next day, just Brian and Janie, who was the front of house manager at the time, and I, and we started making liters of margaritas to go, and we started making a Feed the Family meal, which we still serve.
Really?
But
cool.
It's a big box with enough taco protein and toppings for 6 to 8 people, with chips and salsa and guac and chips. And that, with a liter of margarita, carried so many people through a few days of not going to the store, not going to school.
It was a $100 package for a liter of margaritas, which was 8 margaritas, and then the Feed the Family, 3 proteins, chips, salsa, guac, all toppings, tortillas on the side, can feed 6 people, and $100 out the door. So we just started shuffling those, and we kind of kept that same program, but then obviously, you know, with the times, we had to take on the third parties and go through DoorDash and Grubhub and Uber.
How is that, by the way?
It's better now. Okay.
It's
better now. Yeah. It was hard at first because we had all of these individual programs that we had to individually program the menus and do all of these things. And now, through our new POS, we can just do it through one.
Oh, great. Okay.
One interface takes care
like a hub
of all
and spoke.
Of, yeah. Yes,
nice.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
There was price gouging as well when they started out.
I heard about that. Yeah. From some of the platforms were acting a little bit less than ethically, at least based on what I heard.
Yeah.
No, it's true.
I remember there was a place by us during the height of the pandemic where we got to go from them because my wife and I were like, look, we got to support the restaurants at least around us because we want restaurants to be here whenever this ends, which at the time, you know, no one knew exactly when that was going to be. But I spoke to the owner of that place, and they had like, it was a different supply chain that they got their toilet paper through. And so they started including rolls of toilet paper, if you remember that back then in 2020.
Yeah.
And like so I opened it up. I'm like, why do we have free toilet paper? Like, but it was a nice sort of like anchor point too, you know, where you could get that and go, oh man, these guys are thinking about it. Right. So
completely.
So you support it It's really, really cool.
We bought a few cases of toilet paper and just gave it out to staff as needed.
Yeah,
or people
nice,
as
good.
Needed. Yeah. You know, during that time, just used our ability to go to the restaurant supply and just make sure that our staff was covered.
And we did a bring something, take something table out as well, so people could come in, order tacos, and then donate something. Or if those less fortunate, you know,
yeah.
they could take whatever it was that needed. We had to keep our staff out of all the bags of chips, but. that was, I think, a really nice thing that we ended up collecting more than we were giving away. So we ended up donating it all to We Don't Waste at that time. So it worked out really well.
Well, so I've worked in public affairs my entire life, my entire professional life. And what I know is it takes a very long time to build a reputation. It takes a very short time to destroy one. Like, it really does not take much. And I think back on when I interviewed, it was the guy who founded Modern Market. Which, you know, slightly different business model than you guys. Yeah. But he said, and I think about this all the time, if you have a meal that's good, or even a meal that's just okay, you're going to tell one person, maybe no one, maybe someone asks where you had lunch, you'll mention it. If you have a bad experience, how many people are you going to tell? Like, and he said, bad news travels 10 times faster than good news.
Yeah.
And at first, I was resistant to that idea, but I thought, oh my God, he's right. Because it's like the man bites dog principle, where... That's unusual. You expect a certain level of quality. I'm curious how you guys create a culture and a staff, especially with the challenges in Denver, that allows you to keep the reputation that you have and thrive 11 years later.
A lot of it is just being on your toes and having listening ears. You know, we want to hear feedback, whether it is good. You know, that's nice.
Yeah.
But if it's bad, that's even more important. You know, we want to be able to change. We want to be able to provide good food, good drinks, and good experience. And if we can't do that and we fall short, we want the opportunity to try it again. You know, we want to hear what actually happened. And then, you know, we actually put real thought into, hey, that was a real concern by a real person. Let's have a real effect on how that is at the restaurant.
Sub question. What do you guys think of Yelp?
It's fine. You know, it's fine.
It's a thing that exists.
It's a thing that exists. Yeah. And it's something that. You know, it gives people a platform to say what they need to say. We strongly encourage that they say it to us direct. And so we've actually started a new program where we have a text message that goes out after to-go orders that gives the person the ability to give us the feedback directly. And if they give us, you know, negative feedback, we obviously take it to heart and we're there to give them a response at that time. And the idea is so that at that time we can help, you know, fix whatever the problem might be, but also give them a sense of like these guys care. These guys are working on it. They want to fix it. And if everything was great, then we also prompt if you would like to put that on Google, then please. Mm-hmm. You know, we would still like the positive reviews to be on there and reflect, you know, who we are. So it's a really great program that's kind of helped, I think, keep us on top and, you know, just hit problems right away. And then our staff in-house, that's all for to-go in-house. Our staff is always there to address, and they're attentive. So you can tell if somebody is displeased, they don't have to say it necessarily.
Right.
You know, you can tell and you can
ask. They're saying
it
with their body language.
Was everything
and their tone
okay?
of voice.
Is there something else I can get you? I am here to help you. And we provide those opportunities for our staff, whether it's a mistake or just something wasn't done correctly, to do that. You know, we want to be able to fix problems. We know that it happens. Mistakes happen. But
sure.
It's always how you fix that. So,
I mean, as a consumer, Yelp is helpful to me to a point.
Sure.
Right? Like, you're searching for a specific style of food in a neighborhood that you happen to be visiting. Like, it will point you to any number of places that sort of fit that criteria. But you get into individual reviews, and sometimes you're going, this person is really just sniffing their own farts here. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? They're peacocking. Right. They're like, look at how unimpeachable my taste is. And you go, OK, guy, have a seat. Like, just take a breath, have a Coke and a smile and like, just tell me what I need to know about this place, because a lot of this just feels kind of superfluous to me. So the fact that you're doing it directly with your consumers, I think, is a really good step in circumventing a lot of that peacockery.
Completely. Yeah. And a lot of the time, if there's a problem, people just want to be heard.
Yeah. You don't even
problem.
Have to solve it.
You don't have to. Yeah, exactly. Like,
so
we try to solve it. That's obviously a big part of it, but They want to be heard.
No, I mean, I work in, again, I work in public affairs. And so a lot of times people just want to be acknowledged that they had a problem.
Mm-hmm.
What would you guys say to anyone considering getting into the restaurant business in 2024?
Make sure you have cash.
Yeah.
Lots of capital.
Yeah. Okay.
It's a tough game. Equipment is costly. Breakdowns, you have to have anticipation for, you know, your slow days. And then, obviously, adaptability. You know, you got to make sure that if your opening concept, you thought hot dogs were going to be it.
Have an angle.
It's not. Maybe you need to do something a little different, hot dogs and burgers. And that's, you know, I think a big thing that we've seen with the beer industry, too, is, you know, there were places that were focused solely on sours, focused solely on, you know, red style, red ales. And now they have to. They're bringing in their IPAs. They're bringing in their seltzers because they've got to, you know. And that's the biggest thing is if you have a concept, that's great. But always be ready with something else and always be paying attention. You know, you have to read. You have to be focused. You can't just sit in your restaurant within your four walls and expect something to happen. Yeah. You know, you got to get out there and make it happen, and you got to be ready for anything that might happen. So,
yeah.
And cash.
And plenty of money.
Yeah.
And don't underestimate your staff.
Completely.
They're your lifeblood, you know.
Yeah.
Put the time in. Put the training in. Get to know them. Be there. And anyone who's opening a new restaurant, obviously, is going to be there, you know,
a lot.
But be present, too, and understand everyone's just trying to make it. They're your lifeline.
And listen to them. That's one thing that I really like that we did more back in COVID because things weren't as hard. But we would take initiatives that staff wanted to do, as, you know, focus on their nonprofit that they want to support.
Yeah.
Or a sports team. You know, they're on a softball team. Or roller derby was a big one we were behind up in Fort Collins, and we follow that. Like, we do a cocktail competition, and $1 of each cocktail goes to support that. But that all came from our staff. You know, it doesn't have to be top down. We want to listen to everybody because, again, we've got such great people. Listen to their great ideas and implement their great ideas, you know, and let them run with it and run a program. And
you know, it's analogy I've said to Brian a million times, but a small restaurant is a band, you know.
Nice.
You know, you've got your singer who would be the owner, the manager, whatever. You've got your drummer and your bassist. That's your chefs, you know.
That's your back of the house.
Uh-huh, yep. Absolutely. And then your guitar players, you know, is your floor staff. And everyone needs to work together. Everyone's ideas are valid. Everyone comes up with – everyone's got a song to play. And, you know, you just have to work with it, you know.
Well, if you've ever watched the show Bar Rescue, I've watched more of that show than I care to actually admit. But the problems are so varied in terms of – I remember there was one where the servers were so rude to the back of the house about the way they would treat them. And, you know, not giving them proper tickets, you know, and like, hey, like, what table does this go to? I don't even know. Like, so there was just a miscommunication and that causes problems for the consumer.
Yeah.
So, or for your customer.
Yeah.
And so to hear you guys say that, I think that's really cool. And when everyone's playing in tune, then you get a great song, you get a great experience, you get a great meal.
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing that's been really good for us has been extracurriculars as well. You know, we have taken staff to Mexico to actually be with Proximus Tequila, who's a locally owned micro distillery in Mexico. They are a micro tequila from a, you know. So they've taken us on tours of Guadalajara, Aranda, Samatitan to show, you know, the staff the process. You know, I mean, to take a server, a bartender, a manager, a chef down to Jalisco to see, you know, the birthplace
How
of
cool.
the tequila culture.
It's a full immersive educational experience of basically seed to bottle. And we do that in multiple different distilleries, and we go out to multiple different fields, and we get to be a part of the culture.
That's awesome.
And it's something we've done for the last 11 years, really.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's really helped keep our staff around. We've taken chefs, we've taken our bar managers, service managers, servers and bartenders that have been with us for years, and it's a really, really awesome experience.
You're demonstrating a commitment to them
completely
in that way.
That's a big part of it.
So my question was about turnover. Then you know, like
very little, very
small,
really,
incredibly
that's
small.
Amazing.
We have staff here. I've been here 11 years. Chris has been 8, We have our chef has been 8 or 9. Servers have been 9 or 10.
Kristen's been here 10 years.
Yeah. And then a lot of our like newer staff,
yeah,
they've been here 2.5, 3 years, yeah, or something like that.
Your newer staff.
Our newer staff has been, yeah, here for 2 years. Yeah.
You know, we like to say that we want to be the last restaurant people ever work at.
Mm-hmm. All right.
And we tend to be.
Yeah.
We really do. But we also, you know, we've had kids start as 15-year-old hosts and then work here all the way into college. My daughter works as a busser and host from time to time. She's 15, you know. And anyone that comes through the doors, we provide an opportunity to learn, to grow, whether they want to stay in the industry or not. We'll teach them everything that we can within this business to succeed, whether it's interpersonal skills, you know, management skills, just pure organization.
Yeah, teamwork skills.
It all. With the knowledge of that, if they want to stay here, great. This is a great place to have a career in the restaurant industry.
Yeah.
We treat people well, and it's fantastic. But if you're doing this before you go to grad school or before you go to college or anything that your next step is going to be, we're there to support that step.
Yeah.
And we're there to be a reference no matter if it's 2 weeks from now or 10 years from now. You know, I get calls for reference all the time for people that are, you know, biochemical engineers and, you know, aeronautic scientists now.
Police officers.
Yeah, plenty of police officers. Wow. And doctors. And it's, yeah, like, yeah, they worked here and they were great. And,
yeah,
super happy that 10 years down the line, I'm still on their reference sheet because we wanted to create that for them, you know, give them the opportunity to move on into whatever that might be.
So. Brian and I have a collective over 50 years of restaurant experience between the two of us. And this is all I've ever done. I went to art school. I played in some bands, but I've only done this professionally.
This is where you make your money.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And I even came in here 8.5 years ago just as a side gig so I could get out of the industry. And now now I'm an owner.
Now I'm an owner, yeah.
Time makes fools
of us
all.
That's because he met me and I said, oh, yeah, you're hired. I'm going out of town. If you're here when I get back, you get the job.
Yeah.
And that was 8.5 years ago.
You know, but I think we've talked a lot about it and we've agreed we want to be, you know, the bosses we've never had.
Yeah.
You know, and it's really important to.
I want to be the boss I've never had. What a beautiful statement.
Yeah. And you know, that's our primary concern is our staff, our customers, our quality.
And it's a balance, though, because it's also a business. So mm-hmm. we do have to make tough decisions in order to maintain the business. But we do that in the sense of, like, we have our ideals that we really want to focus on. And we really want to have impact, not only our staff, but our customers can feel that as well.
Yeah.
And it's played a big part in the community, I think.
I think you can tell. I mean, you go to restaurants, if you're a regular anywhere and the staff is always turning over, that's not usually a great sign.
Yeah.
Right? When you see some friendly faces again and again and again, then you as the customer cultivate a relationship with that staff in that restaurant. That bond goes a lot deeper to exactly what you said, Brian, which is you see them meet here and then you cater their kid's first birthday.
Mm-hmm.
Over the course of those years, they become those folks to you. And that relationship is remarkable because you start as strangers and it's a transactional relationship, but it goes a little deeper than that because food is something that we all have to do.
Yep.
That's incredible, guys. Where do you see this going? You have a second location in Fort Collins. If I were to reconnect with you guys in 5 years.
I mean, I would hope that we did have 3 locations. And so in December, we actually downsized from our 6th Avenue location here in Denver. And it's been a nice refocus tool for us to kind of hone in on what's working, what's not, some processes. We brought on a new business partner as well that's helping a bunch on the marketing side. And, you know, the goal for us is to expand. You know, we love our small community, but we want to take this elsewhere.
Sure.
And, you know, being in Fort Collins is such a great spot. And that restaurant has its own community and vibe and feel and staff that's been there for years and years and years too. And we want to take that and emulate it in different communities, you know, not necessarily one right down the street, which is where our 6th Avenue one, which was kind of tough because we were dipping into our
own. You're cannibalizing a little bit.
Exactly. So, you know, take it somewhere else. I'd like to see us in maybe a mountain town.
That'd be cool. Yeah.
I love Salida myself. So being up in Salida or BV, we've talked about maybe going down to the Springs or Castle Rock. But also, you know, there's some food desert. Lakewood, I think we could do great. Littleton, Parker,
definitely.
Yeah. So, you know, the idea is to grow, but still with this same community aspect of, you know,
you want to maintain the ethos.
Exactly. We have to.
Yeah.
You have to maintain that.
And you can't spread yourselves too thin. Otherwise, you degrade the overall feel.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah, I hear you.
Yep.
Small business is more important now than ever.
Yeah.
Community houses. I might go on a little soapbox here, but I just see, you know,
get it.
So many things are seem like a conglomeration, you know, especially when we look at media, news, movies, record labels, just things that are, you know, becoming subsidiaries of other things. And, you know, as the world becomes increasingly digital and technological and specified, there's very little, you know, you said analog before, and that I love that word, you know, it is.
Yeah.
You know, it is the way, and small businesses are analog. Small restaurants and bars are analog, and they're attainable, and they're understandable. You know, and they're accessible. We need a proliferation of that.
Man after my own punk rock heart. So, let me ask you guys something. Just given the tough environment here in Denver, you have for yourselves done really, really well in creating the restaurant that you want to be and being the bosses that you never had. If you were granted benevolent dictatorship over Denver, in the purview
declined.
With the purview over restaurants, what would you do, or small business? Let's expand it to small business. Uh-huh. What would be some things that you would do to create the environment to foster the type of environment where we can have small businesses like this thrive and grow and create community?
One thing that I've always envisioned, and that's the beauty of being on a small street of other businesses, is competition always creates collectiveness. And so if you can somehow hone in on the fact that there's competition, but with the same general goal of winning and surviving and thriving, and you can make those two things work together where you're competition, but you talk to each other. So you know, hey, I'm getting a good deal over here. Hey, this actually didn't work. I changed to this program. You know, an open platform where competitors can talk and help each other. Obviously, you know, I don't think we fight against each other, sure, but that's not our goal. We just have to do that to survive.
Yeah.
And if we could collectively somehow make it so that there's a bigger community on some things, and we take it against, you know, our distributors, and we win against our tequila and liquor companies and our food companies and our taxes. And I think that would just be, you know, a nice shift instead of us not talking to our neighbor because we have to make sure that we beat them in sales.
It reminds me of the movie The Warriors.
Yeah, exactly. I think Chris has made that reference with us a few times.
We're fighting over our turf, our 10 square feet of turf. That's a ridiculous fight to have.
Yeah.
There's bigger fish to fry out there. There's bigger bosses out there to slay, right? Yep. Rather than putting your neighbor out of business.
Completely.
Right? So, I don't know. So, like, you're next door to a pizza joint, let's say, right? People aren't always in the mood for tacos. People aren't always in the mood for pizza. Right? So if you guys can be friendly, you're competing against each other, sort of.
Completely.
Right? Like, you are, but you also aren't.
Yeah.
Right.
So is that kind of what you're getting at?
That's exactly it. You know, we've got a good relationship with pretty much everyone on this street.
We do have a pizza place next door. And
exactly.
We each send each other over, you know, when maybe you're waiting for your pizza over there, you come here and get a beer.
Yeah. There's a lot of that.
You know.
I mean, they came over and borrowed towels from us this morning, you know? Yeah. Like, we always are seeing them and crossing paths.
There you go.
And,
yeah.
It's something the Colorado Restaurant Association has done a pretty good job of spreading the information as much as possible. And then we've got our, just on this street, Old South Pearl Street Merchants Association, that does a great job with that too. It's still trying to maintain that community aspect. Yes, there's competition, sure.
Yeah.
But can we learn from each other? Yes. Can we grow?
Fair is fair.
Oh, absolutely. So,
no, I totally hear you. Well, here's the part in the show where we do plugs. Where can people find you guys online, in real life? Anything you want to plug, do it now.
Absolutely. So we are located on South Pearl Street, 1585 South Pearl Street in Platt Park near DU in Wash Park. And then we're up in Fort Collins at 120 West Olive Street. Our website is unomastaqueria.com.
What's the cross street on Olive?
It's basically Olive and College.
Okay.
We're just west by the Armstrong Hotel. Yeah, okay. The Aggie Theater is right around the corner from us.
Okay, so not quite to Mason.
Correct. But like, right in between.
Because Mason's the next block, isn't
yep.
it?
Okay. Yep, yep.
So right between College and Mason.
On the alley, in fact.
Cool. Oh, yeah. Nice. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And that one's got a great patio, too, south-facing patio. So that one, the patio cranks during, you know, the colder months because 45 and sunny. That's patio season. Yeah. So
in Colorado.
In Colorado, yeah.
Well, we're at unomastaqueria.com. And then we have an Instagram, which is also just unomastaqueria.
Nice. Yeah.
I think that's kind of all the places. Obviously, Google us anytime. We've got a pretty good SEO set up there. Yeah, I mean, come grab a seat at the bar, grab a seat at the patio.
I still work in the bar here a couple days.
Sweet.
Mondays and Wednesdays, just to be present, be on site. I left to go, manage 6th and Fort Collins, you know, and do the back end business here, but kind of get back on the bar from time to time to be a face because. First and foremost, I'm a bartender, and I love working here. I missed it terribly, and it's fun to be back.
Well, I'll tell you what. When you see Chris behind the bar, ask him about Idols, who I'm pals with Nerf from 93.3, says is the most important punk band working today, even though they call themselves not a punk band.
Huh.
So that is his band. Every time I see him, it seems like he's wearing either a Bad Religion or an Idols shirt. So, and you'll see it in the photo. He's wearing one today. Brian, Chris, this was an enormous pleasure, and it's my privilege to be able to feature you. I wish you guys nothing but continued success.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, we appreciate
it. We appreciate
you. Thank you, John.
My God, who's hungry? That'll do it for episode 371 of the John of All Trades podcast. Big thanks to Brian Forrester and Chris Rohde of Uno Mas Taqueria for sharing their story with us. Hie thee down to South Pearl Street or by the Armstrong Hotel in Fort Collins. Get yourself some tacos. Get yourself some tequila. My God, I loved sitting in there. That is a great place. You'll love it too if you haven't checked it out. All the info is on the companion blog piece, that's johnofalltrades.us, or in the show notes. No matter what you're listening on, whether it's iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Pandora, Audible, wherever you get your pods, it's down there in the show notes. And hey, wherever you're listening, if they give you the opportunity to leave a rating, leave a review, say something nice about it, please do so. That helps it grow. We talk about how bad news travels 10 times faster than good news. Be one of the ones who makes the good news travel fast. You can do that by getting with me on the socials. That's J-O-A-T pod across platforms. Facebook, Twitter, Snapchat, Pinterest, Instagram, Blue Sky, and Threads. I'm on like 3 of those. It's still Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I don't know, man. Twitter keeps getting worse. And I've never really done Snapchat well, nor Pinterest. I don't know why I keep saying them. But alas, here we are. Hit me up on any of those. Share this episode. Tell a friend about it. I love you when you do that. I'll be back here at some point. I got some good guests in the hopper, but like I said, I don't know exactly when that'll be. Wherever you are, I hope you are happy. I hope you are successful. I hope you are finding fulfillment. I adore you for letting me be a part of your life. Now let's go get some tacos. Let's get some tequila. And until I hear you again, say goodnight, crazy.
That's good, Johnny.